So at the 8 o'clock service today, we had one 45-year-old t-shirt. Is there anybody who can top that here at this service? Somebody's looking down saying, not 45. Getting close over there. Anyone have a t-shirt 20 years older or older that they brought or wore to church today? Yep. Yes, good for you. Yes, what, Dad, how old's your t-shirt? 38 years, that's pretty good. I don't have any in my arsenal that are quite that old. But thank you. I hope that you will continue to go up and talk to people about why they wore that t-shirt that they wore today. There are some stories. I learned great stories all morning long about the connections to families and the places and all of the sacred markers that happen. I want to talk a little bit about some of the t-shirts that I wanted to bring. Here's, first of all, the t-shirt that I had in my wardrobe for too many years, according to Holly. Life is short, pray hard, read the book. It was a favorite t-shirt of mine. It was back when that was Reebok's logo, if some of you recognize Reebok's logo. And I wore it to death, so much that I bought a second one. The first one wore out. I bought a second one, and then I wore that one to death. And I was hopeful I still had it in my wardrobe, but I think it didn't survive the move from Rockville to Annapolis. So it's just a memory in a picture now at the Grand Canyon. So the other t-shirt that I have with me, it's a long sleeve t-shirt. I want to wear it today because, well, it's kind of hot outside. But this was old even before I bought it. I bought it used at a garage sale, but I loved it. It was when the Life is Good thing was just starting to make its appearance. It was just brand new, that brand. And I was coaching soccer at the time. Yeah, that's it. I was coaching soccer at the time. It's got a little kid playing soccer on it, and I wore it to the beach. I wore it everywhere, and this is probably now the oldest t-shirt in my repertoire. I don't have anything that goes to 38 years, Paul, sorry, or 45 years. The other t-shirt that I'm wearing today is one that is a favorite and sentimental favorite of mine, and if you see the back of it, it's not what you'd expect a pastor to say. It's on the back. It says, "Don't go to church." But you have to get closer to see the bottom says, "Be the church." So it's not just about going to church, be the church. And years ago, my previous church, we bought a bunch of these t-shirts, but more than that, we did that. I remember going to my finance committee and saying, "I'm thinking about canceling church one Sunday. What do you think about that?" And the finance committee didn't think it would, they were a little trepidatious about it, and our church council was too. But we canceled church for a couple years in a row on a Sunday in the fall, and we would, instead of going to church, we would be the church that day. We went out into the community and served in lots of ways, and then we'd come together that night and tell the stories about the ways that we had served and experienced God. So it was a really exciting time, and this is one of my oldest, rattiest t-shirts that I refuse to get rid of. It's a sacred marker for me about that. This week, during the middle of Bible school, I got to go down to another place that is full of sacred markers. How many of you have been down to Arlington National Cemetery? How many of you have been to a service there? It's quite moving to be part of a service. I've probably officiated about 8 or 10 services over the years, and some with the full thing, you know, with the horse and the chariot and the caisson and the 21-gun salute. So I've done everything from a very quiet service like I did this week, which was just an interment of ashes at the columbarium, to the full thing, and it's just an amazing thing. I remember walking with a chaplain one day, and I think it might have been one of the days that it was a fuller service. We were walking behind the caisson, and he said, "You know, the Army doesn't treat its members really nice when they're in the service, but we sure do a good job once they're out of the service." And so they talked about the special way that we mark the passing of these lives. And it was a sacred moment to be there, and I was aware that I was talking about sacred markers today. And so these sacred markers were all around me. Every one of those markers tells a story and commemorates a life, many of those lives given in the midst of war. It was particularly moving and very timely to know that the woman that we were saying goodbye to, Lois Bain, her husband had been in the avionics. He was an avionics engineer. And he had worked in the Apollo program for many years. So this was a week, of all weeks, to be down there and telling his story. And Lois, his widow, who now is deceased, Kathleen Douglas's mother, loved being part of that. Kathleen, who's a member of our church, grew up with Neil Armstrong's kids in her school where she was. And so they were all part of that. And so we've seen the other sacred markers this week, if you've been paying attention at all to the news about the 50th anniversary of the Apollo program and the landing on the moon. How many of you can remember where you were when you first saw this sacred marker, right? You have a time and a place and an image in mind that this evokes for you, remembering that moment in our nation's history, one of those sacred markers that was placed, not just here on the earth, but in the moon. And Lois's life and her husband, Robert Bain, connected those two markers for me this week. In the story that we read out of Joshua for Bible school, and again today, it is a transition point in the life of the people of Israel. Martha was our Bible exploration leader, did a wonderful job in that classroom. She transformed it into all kinds of things. There were special manna and little cornflakes, and there we had quail. What were the quail this week?
The marshmallow peep.
Marshmallow peep, quail. And they were learning about the law, they were learning about the giving of the law, and they were learning about Moses. And then we got to the day where we learned the story about Joshua leading the people on that final leg of their journey into the promised land, and what a sacred moment it was for the people of Israel. It was sort of a new crossing of the Red Sea, if you will. Now Moses had helped part the Red Sea, now Joshua was helping to lead the people safely across the Jordan River. And so the priests were to carry the Ark of the Covenant, which signified the presence of God, ahead of the people, and then to sort of mark it in the middle, to stand in the middle as the people cross safely. And then they were to take 12 stones and to mark that place. This is kind of a classical art depiction of it. This is our version of it, that coming out of room 302 as the children are carrying the Ark of the Covenant and leading the band of Israelites out into the hallway. And so they were learning that story, this important moment in the life of Israel, right out here in our building. And these are the words from Joshua. I want to come back to these. When your children ask in a time to come, what do those stones mean to you? The 12 stones, the one for each of the 12 tribes of Israel. You're to remind them that this is a sign that God had been present with us, right? God's presence had led us through the Jordan in front of the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. So these stones shall be to the Israelites a memorial forever. Sacred markers, right? To remember God's presence. I want to reflect just for a couple moments on what it means to have sacred markers in our lives, whether they be stones or t-shirts or photos or whatever. How do they function in our lives? Now, stones mark a lot of sacred things. You don't have, not just the people of Israel. If you go any culture, any continent, you will see sites that are marked by holy stones or sacred stones. You've been all over the world and you see that. You see that in our national parks especially. But people have always used stones to sort of mark the presence of something important or sacred. And so sacred markers help us to remember how far we've come in a biblical sense, and about God's presence with us, God's faithfulness with us along the way. That's how these stones were to function for the Israelites, right? So that they wouldn't, in generations to come, they wouldn't forget how important this moment was. They wouldn't forget that they hadn't gotten there on their own, but only by the goodness of God. They had gotten there because God had been faithful to them all through the desert, and now was helping them make this last step over into this new land, this new place that they weren't sure of. And so the sacred markers help us remember God's presence in the past. But they don't only help us remember the past, right? These sacred markers also help us to trust that God is going to be with us whenever we cross over these new thresholds into a place we're not sure of. I was telling the families at Vacation Bible School, like when you send your kid off to kindergarten for the first time, and we have a lot of those kids in our church now who are here at Vacation Bible School. You remember what that's like. Or when they go off to college. Or when a son or daughter gets married. Or when you have your first grandchild. All of those sacred moments in your lives that sort of mark a new threshold that you cross over. Taking on a new job. Moving to a new community where there's a lot of uncertainty. There might be a lot of joy and expectation. But there's also a lot of uncertainty about what it's going to mean. Who are going to be my friends? What are my neighbors going to be like? Will I find a church home? All of those things. And so part of the reason the people of Israel were asked to mark that moment was not just so they could look back, but so they could look ahead as well. and trust God with their future, not because God had been present to them in the past. Now, in our national parks, we're going to get to go up to Acadia in Maine for the first time. I've never been there. How many of you have been to Acadia? Anybody? It's a beautiful place. I've seen pictures, and I can't wait to go. Some of our national parks mark the trails with stones. It's getting complicated because people like to do it their own way, too. And so they're having to come up with these prohibitions. Please don't mark with the stones because it's getting confusing. But at Acadia, they still mark in a special way some of the trails, and they look like this. And we're looking forward to sort of making our way forward. These are people who have been here before, and they know the way. So here's your way to find your way forward. The sacred markers help us find our way forward. Sacred markers help us to remember who we are, and they also connect us to the stories of other people. Like, we weren't there at the Jordan River, were we? This is an old story. But we get connected to the stories of people, not just in our faith journey, but in our lives, by these markers along the way, by these family heirlooms that get passed on, by these places that we go together. There are places that have kind of importance to your family because of the times that you have shared there. For me, growing up, for example, North Wildwood, 20 years of vacation in the same place, going to the same bakery, going to the same beach. That was sacred sand on my feet year after year after year because of all those memories that were connected to it. I had lunch this week with one of our recently graduated college students, Sarah Henke. And for those of you who know Sarah, Sarah is an incredibly gifted, creative young woman. She sings, she writes poetry, she writes. She's currently doing some work with a museum in Western Massachusetts, trying to find her next step out of college, like a job that will really pay her, so she doesn't have to couch surf and do things like that. And I had a wonderful time talking with her, catching up about what she's been doing for the last 4 years while she's in college. Turns out she had gotten really involved with poetry slams. Now, these are poetry competitions that take place, and it's a spoken word competition. So it's not just the written word, but it's how you perform these poems and you speak them. And so I asked her to tell me about some of the ones that were most important to her. And she said, you know, I've been writing some of these poems about my grandfather, who has Alzheimer's and is losing touch with his own stories, losing touch with his own memories. And so one of the ways I've been trying to stay connected to his stories and speak his story in the world is by these poems. And I thought that was a wonderful thing because here I thought to myself, these poems that this young woman is writing are sacred markers, aren't they? They are connecting the past with the present and the future. They're connecting her life with her grandfather's life. They are still telling his story in the world just the same way that those stones were to tell the story of God's faithfulness to the people of Israel. Sacred markers help us connect with each other's stories too. Our family stories, our faith stories are part of God's kingdom stories. And then finally, I want to share this. Some of our sacred markers are chosen for us. The Israelites get to choose, or they are told what to do, to place these stones down in a certain place, a certain number, in a certain way, right? We don't always get to choose our sacred markers. Sometimes they choose us. And what I mean by this is, I never thought that the Delaware Memorial Bridge would become a sacred marker for me. But it is. Because as I was driving over that bridge just last month with Holly, we were on our way up to see our daughter in Connecticut for the first time. She's just moved there recently. But every time I drive over this bridge, it immediately takes me back to the summer of 1994 when I drove over that bridge on my way to southern New Jersey to see my father in the hospital after his drowning accident. And so whenever that bridge evokes that memory for me. Now, that was a hard time, and my dad ended up dying after helping to rescue these girls from the ocean. It was a hard, emotional time for our family because he lingered on for a little while. And yet, it has become a sacred time as well, because I think about the way that God was present to us in the middle of that grief and that pain, and there was a lot of tenderness, and there was a lot of love, and there was a lot of storytelling. And so when I cross the bridge, it's bittersweet. It's not all sadness. It is an occasion to remember my dad's life. And so sometimes these markers choose us. And I bet you could think of one or two or five that you have in your life, things that evoke other things in you. And I want to encourage you to look for God in those places too. Maybe God is not always evident right away in those places. But how has God been present to you and faithful to you through the years and through the growth and through the memories and through those connections? So the text asks a question, or a couple questions of us. How are you marking God's presence in your life? What are you doing to mark your own spiritual growth and maturity? Your own path and journey with God? These stones were meant to be markers, as kind of a placeholder, connect them to a particular time and place. What are you doing to connect yourself to the different points along your faith journey? For some of us, it is a camp t-shirt, like to a youth camp that you went to as a teenager. Beth, our administrative assistant, office manager, she wore her camp, what's the camp called again? I can't remember what it's called. But it's a 38-year-old t-shirt, she said. And it was a very formative thing. It was a Quaker camp. It was a spiritual place for her. And to this day, that place and that t-shirt means something to her. When we baptize children in this church, when we go to, we have a class for the families. One of the rituals that Erica has encouraged our families to do is to create a baptism box. So that on the day of the baptism, you save maybe you save any pictures you took, you save the bulletin from that day to mark that day. But then you build over the years. You maybe, that's where you put some special things that come home from Sunday school over the years. So you have a box to talk about with your child, right? About some of the markers of faith along the way. Some of you are journalers. Some of you keep track of your spiritual journey by journaling and writing about it. Maybe not all the time, but maybe from time to time. And that can be a way to mark the journey. Some of you connect your faith journey to particular places and times and moments, a mission trip, or and something that was particularly meaningful at church or outside of church. I still think, I held on to this letter that I wrote to God when I was 13 years old. It was a part of an experience on a youth retreat in Cholera, Maryland, at Hilltop Ranch, where our church youth went every year. And I still have that letter. Just like I still have all the love letters that Holly and I wrote to each other in college that she wanted to throw out, but I wanted to keep. She doesn't have a sentimental bone in her body. She will tell you that. I'm sort of the sappy one out of the two of us. But I've held on to that letter that I wrote to God, sort of a covenant, a promise to follow Jesus all these years, because I want to remember my 13-year-old commitment as well as my commitment to Jesus when I'm 58 years old as well, and every step along the way. So I don't know how you are marking the time, but I would just encourage you to find ways to mark this journey that you've been on with God. Maybe I saw somebody wearing a t-shirt from another church that has been an important part of their faith journey. It's not their church now because they live up here. But it was Meg Moore who had a shirt on from one of her churches in Louisiana. It was so important to her. So the other question that this text asks of us is, how are you sharing your faith with your children? Because that's where this story gets its oomph, right? It says, when your children ask you about the stones, be ready to tell them what they mean. And so I would encourage you to think about, how are you sharing your faith with your children? I hope that we just took a week of intensive faith sharing with our kids here, and we'll take another week of doing that, planting these seeds of faith and telling these stories in important and fun and joyful ways. But how are you doing that as a parent, and how are you doing that as a grandparent? I would say that a lot of the spiritual education that happens for our kids is kind of informal. Some of it's very intentional, but a lot of it's informal. It's like your kids watching you and asking you questions. Mom, Dad, why did we go to church? Why did you go to that mission trip? Why do you give money to this thing or to that thing? Why are we collecting clothes? The questions that allow you to just talk about faith with your children or your grandchildren. Or why do you love this person in your neighborhood who's so mean to you? And you have an opportunity to talk about your faith and your witness and to tell your story. So how are you sharing faith with your children? How are we sharing faith with our children? I think that's what we're being asked. The tagline all through Bible school this year is that God is good. When we are fearful, when we're going through change. And on the last day, it was, when life is good, God is good. And so I'd encourage you to look for the sacred markers that are all around you. When life is good, God is good. God is with us in the good times and the bad times, the hard times and the joyful times, the times we're not sure of ourselves, and the times when we feel God most closely. May you find sacred markers all around you. May you keep them, tell the stories about them, and just pay attention because they are there. Amen.